A Ship Named Francis by John Ringo and Victor Mitchell. Chapter 1. Siberia is a Concept. Sean Tyler tapped on the open door to the sick bay and entered at a grunt from within. Tyler was just pushing 23 T-years and was on the beginning of his second hitch with the Manticore Navy. He was dark-complected and stood a bit under normal height for a Manticoran, both of which would help him blend with his new Grayson crewmates. On the other hand, he seemed nearly as broad as he was tall, a situation of being big-boned rather than massive. He had been assigned to the Super Dreadnought Victory until his sudden, unexpected, and late-in-the-day departure for his new assignment. A chief warrant officer in his 30s, short and dark as most Graysons were, with a lean gray face, was sitting at a desk staring at a pad as if the message on it might leap out of the screen and bite. "Corpsman Third Class Sean Tyler reporting for duty," Sean said, snapping to attention and throwing a parade ground salute. He was mildly surprised to find the warrant still on duty. It was nearly 2,400 hours ship time. The warrant tossed the pad on his desk and made a gesture towards his forehead that might graciously have been considered a salute and waved at a chair. "Welcome, my friend. Welcome to the Francis Mueller," the officer replied. "Grab a seat. I'll be with you in a minute." Sean sat down and looked around at what was his new home, for however long he was going to be here. His first impression was that the sick bay was small, less than a quarter of the size of the main sick bay on the Victory-class Super Dreadnought that had been his first assignment. It was even smaller than the three secondary sick bays scattered throughout that massive ship. On the other hand, the complement of the heavy cruiser Francis Mueller was less than a tenth the complement of the SD. Not only was the Francis smaller than the SD, it was far older. Indeed, the class was among the oldest designs in the Alliance fleet. Although it was already obsolete, the ship had been sent to Grayson early in the current war against the Peeps. At the time, it was one of the most powerful ships in that planet's fleet. Now, though, between the large number of converted Peep SDs, captured at first and second Yeltsin, and the new Grayson SDs and cruisers that were starting to flow out of the yards, it was again in the position of being an outmoded and underarmed relic. Furthermore, it looked it. No matter how many times a ship was sent into the yards for overhaul, no matter how thoroughly that overhaul was done, the ship always showed its age. It was apparent in the little patches of mold that crept out from bulkhead corners, in the worn spots, even in the design of bunks, tables, and other fittings, which had changed subtly over the years of war. So there was a reason Tyler had a sour expression when the warrant finally tossed the pad on his desk. "You don't look happy, Corpsman," the warrant said, pulling open a bottom drawer on his desk and extracting a half-filled flaccid bladder of unidentified liquid. He squirted a generous measure into a mug of tea on the desk, then waved it at Tyler. "Medicinal belt?" "No, sir. Thank you, sir," Sean replied, wondering if the clear liquid was anything other than water. Then the smell hit him. "Chief Warrant Officer Robert Kearns," the warrant continued, putting the bladder away. "I'm the physician's assistant on this tub. You may call me Doc." "Yes, sir," Sean said. "Did you get stowed away? Got a locker, bunk, all that stuff?" "Yes, sir. The bosun met us and assigned us quarters." "Good, good," the warrant replied. "Where'd they ship you in from? You're Manticoran, right?" "Yes, sir," Tyler said. "Wanted to come slum with the religious nuts?" "No, sir," the corpsman replied. "I had applied for a transfer to the Grayson service nearly a year ago. It's considered a good move, promotion-wise, working with other Alliance forces." Uh-huh, the warrant said. So you're telling me you volunteered for the Francis Mueller? Well, I volunteered for Grayson's service, and there was a priority opening on the Mueller, sir, so here I am. He looked around, then decided to take a chance. I made a serious mistake, didn't I? Yep, the medic replied, taking a pull off of his reinforced tee. You ever have to trank anybody on your previous ship? Once, Tyler replied. Is that a particular problem? We get about one trank call a week, the warrant admitted. Sometimes more on bad weeks. What we do then is put them in a jacket and tie them to their bunk. When they come around, we try to decide if it was temporary or permanent. If they talk nice, we let them out. If they don't, we leave them in confinement until we can get a transship to a safe ground area. Once a week? Sean gasped. In his 6 months on the Victory, there had been a total of 4 people who had succumbed to situational stress disorder, or the bug, as most people called it. And you've still got a crew at all? We've got guys on this ship, I swear, are addicted to trank. Cop, he's the missile tech. He's been tranked about 6 times. Cooper in engineering, it's about once a month, like clockwork. Heck, the reason you were a priority replacement is that the other 2 corpsmen were both medical evacs. If the timing had been different, you would have met your predecessor on the way over. We transshipped him to the Victory. Weird, Sean said. Any particular reason? Oh, the warrant said with a slight catch in his voice. I think you'll come to a few conclusions over time. Now hear this. Now hear this. Morning prayers. All hands not on watch. Uncover for morning prayers. Sean hadn't had a chance to meet any of his fellow compartment sharers last night. They were all on second watch and had racked out by the time he entered the compartment. Now, as the lights came up and the other 3 stood up and clasped their hands, he wondered what to do. Being a Manticoran, he was not a member of the Church of Humanity Unchained, so he was under no obligation to join in the morning prayers. But getting up and getting ready for the day wasn't exactly a good idea either, so he figured he'd just bow his head and sit through it. How long could it take?
Tester, a nasally voice said over the enunciator. Spare us this day from your tests. Please, Tester, don't let any of the airlocks blow out. Let the environmental system, old as it is, shudder through another day of labor. Please, Tester, let the water recyclers make it through a few more days, even though engineering says they're just about shot. Tester, please see fit to keep Fusion 4 from terminally overloading and blowing us all into your arms. We love you, but we want to see our families again someday. Please, Tester, if you could maybe see clear to keeping the compensator online. If we don't have the compensator, we can't make our acceleration back home, and we'll drift in space, a derelict, until the systems begin to fail and the power runs out and the air gets foul and we all start eating each other.
It continued in the same vein for a good 15 minutes as the quavering voice slowly worked its way through every imaginable disaster scenario. Spaceships are, inherently, disasters waiting to happen. It was one of the main reasons that the bug was a problem. Any reasonably intelligent individual dealt with a certain amount of apprehension, as it was politely termed, as soon as he was out of the atmosphere. Vacuum is very unforgiving stuff, and even the most advanced technologies could not make space truly safe. But most people were polite enough not to mention it in public, much less broadcast it in detail over the enunciator.
He began to see why people tended to flip out on the Francis Mueller. And he wondered, as he was getting dressed in the crowded but mostly silent compartment, how much worse it could get. "What do you mean we're lost?" Warrant Officer Kearns had just brought Tyler to the bridge to meet the captain. The first words out of his new commander's mouth were not ones to settle Sean's apprehension. Captain Zemet was incredibly handsome, with high cheekbones and a keyline nose and a chin that you could use to crack walnuts. He probably could have been a Hellevid star with one exception. He was short, even by Grayson standards. On Manticore, the word dwarf might have been used. He was looking up at the not much taller lieutenant with an expression of absolute perplexity on his face. "We're not lost, sir," the lieutenant standing braced in front of the captain replied. "We just appear to be off course."
"Do you know why?" the captain asked.
"Not yet, sir," the lieutenant said. "We appear to have suffered a change in a course due to a gravitational anomaly."
"Gravitational anomaly," the captain replied.
"Yes, sir," the sweating lieutenant replied.
"We're lost."
The speaker was a tall man by Grayson standards, with a pale complexion and a thin, ascetic face. He was dressed entirely in black. Either death had decided to visit the Francis Mueller, a possibility that had some validity, all things considered, or Sean was in the presence of the ship's chaplain.
"We're lost, wandering helpless in the depths of space," the chaplain said.
It was the same reedy voice from morning prayers. "We're not lost, Chaplain Olds," the captain said. "We simply have to make a course correction."
"How much of a course correction?" he asked the astrogator.
"We're still computing that, sir," the lieutenant replied.
"But we're at least 120,000 kilometers off base course."
"Good tester," the captain swore. "It occurs to me that we made a close pass by Blackbird 6. You did figure that into your equations, didn't you, Astro?"
The lieutenant hesitated.
"Let me check my notes."
"You didn't, did you?" the captain said. "It suddenly occurs to me that if you didn't figure it into your calculations, you probably also didn't consider that it was out there, did you? It crosses my mind that you didn't mention that we were doing a close pass until Tactical picked up the moon on Lidar at under 63,000 kilometers. I remember thinking that was cutting it a bit close, all things considered."
"I'm not sure, sir," the lieutenant said. "Sweet tester," the chaplain exclaimed. "In my wildest nightmares, I never considered that we could slam unthinking into a celestial body. The ship would be strewn across its surface. Unless we noticed in time and sent out a distress call, we could be lost for all time. No one would ever find the wreckage. We would die, lost and alone, our bodies and souls left to drift helplessly in the depths of space."
"Tomorrow's going to be a doozy," the warrant muttered under his breath. "Sir," the speaker was a short, how else, broad lieutenant commander, presumably the XO. Tyler hadn't seen him arrive. He had just appeared out of nowhere, as if teleported in. "There are penalties in the rules for court-martial regarding failure to perform prescribed duties and placing a ship in unnecessary hazard. We could convene a summary court and have the astrogator spaced."
"I don't think that will be necessary, XO," the captain said helplessly.
"Chaplain, why don't you go tend to your flock? Or maybe say a few private prayers for our well-being in your cabin. Astro, go punch in the gravitational pull of Blackbird 6 and see if that works."
He turned to Tyler and the warrant and gave them both a brilliant smile.
I take it this is the new medic?
Doc flipped into his chair and opened up the bottom drawer, pouring a shot into his tea again.
So, what's your impression so far?
He asked, taking a sip.
You only lose one guy a week?
Sean said with a quivering laugh.
You noticed,
the warrant said, lifting the bladder. Medicinal belt?
Not yet,
Tyler said, deeply tempted.
Is it just me, or is everyone on this vessel insane?
Certainly the entire chain of command, the warrant replied, taking another sip. You haven't even met the chief engineer, who at least is competent.
And the chaplain?
Sean asked carefully. Chaplains by law have the run of the ship and are an entity to themselves, Doc replied with a grimace. In the case of Chaplain Olds, he has two problems, an overactive imagination and insomnia. I can't do anything about the former, but I've tried to prescribe sleeping pills. No luck. He considers them to be a devil's brew. So he lies awake all ship's night, imagining all the horrible things that can, and very occasionally do, go wrong with the ship. He's also egged by some of the ship's company that have more of a sense of humor than common sense. Ribert, down in engineering, is forever coming up with new things that need your prayers, Chaplain. I've considered just tranking Ribert to get him off the ship, but that seems over the top. Then there's the automatic deference to chaplains that is instilled in Grayson at the bone. I'll admit that after the morning prayer, I'm a little apprehensive, and I've never considered that an astrogator might just forget that there is a planet around. But I still think that what the chaplain needs is a good lay. He seems really uptight. The chief grimaced, and Sean realized what he'd said.
I hadn't meant to impugn your faith, chief, Tyler said formally.
Oh, it's not that, the warrant replied wearily. You weren't here for the infamous STD incident. Doc took a healthy slug of his tea and then poured a straight-up refill.
STD? Tyler said. I'm not sure what that stands for.
Sexually transmitted disease, the warrant said dryly. I'm aware that they've been wiped out among the Manticorans, but they do occasionally crop up in Celestia. We had a little incident on our last cruise that way. Let's just say the chaplain was not one of those who did not contract it. Tyler looked at him questioningly, and the warrant shrugged. Long story. Stupid story. Maybe some other time. The chief took another sip, obviously gathering his thoughts. It's like this. You know the Grayson Navy has expanded nearly 50-fold since we joined the Alliance.
I'm aware of that, sir, Tyler said. Is that part of it?
That's most of it, Doc replied. Whenever you do that fast of an expansion, you get people who rise beyond their level of competence. When that is realized, if nobody gets killed by it, you have a few choices. You can demote the person, which requires a lot of paperwork and time by competent authorities, time which is in short supply. Or you can shuffle them off where they aren't going to be much of a bother. Are you getting my drift?
Oh,
Sean started to open his mouth and then closed it. And yes, the warrant said dryly, raising his cup, I'm included in that bunch. Whatever my competence as a doc, I've got a bit of a drinking problem. So here I am, exiled to Siberia.
Well,
Tyler said with a laugh, at least the exec has a sense of humor.
What do you mean?
Well, Tyler said, grinning, when he said they should court-martial the navigation officer and he stopped when he saw the warrant officer's face.
He was joking, right?
Nope, the medic said, pulling out the bladder and taking a squirt from the neck. Welcome to Siberia, Corman.
I think I'll have that drink now, Tyler said weakly.
Chapter 2. The Consolations of Faith.
Tester, spare us this day from your tests. Please don't let us slam into any celestial bodies, our souls to drift helplessly through the deeps of space as our families wonder what disaster has overtaken us and left us, Tester, bereft and alone among the stars. Tester, spare us this day from your tests. It's been 3 days now, Tester, and Astrogation is still trying to figure out where we are. If you could maybe see the way clear, Tester, to giving them a hint how to find our way back to Grayson before the air runs out, or the environmental systems fail, or one of the shuddering fusion reactors explodes, spreading our constituent atoms among the stars. Tester, spare us this day from your tests. Tester, I understand that one of the beta nodes is looking pretty bad. If we lose it, Tester, please don't blast out the whole bank. We still don't know exactly where Grayson is, Tester, and we won't be able to send out a distress call that will be picked up unless we can send it in their direction. We don't want to die, Tester, drifting through the empty blackness of the heavens, our bodies shriveled by vacuum, fighting like rabid dogs, Tester, over the compartments that still have air.
Chapter 3. Reactions and Alarms. Tyler was just stooging through the bridge, on his way to the Missile Tech's quarters where there were reports of illicit gambling being conducted, when the alarm went off. The captain was on the bridge 3 seconds after the alarm started, in a crouch, looking as if he didn't know which way to run.
"Is that the reactor alarm?"
the captain yelled.
"You're the captain,"
Tyler said quietly, putting his hand over his eyes and mentally kissing his butt goodbye.
"You don't know?"
"Fusion 3 is an alarm,"
the engineering watch PO said,
"but there's no sign of the fault on my screens." "Prepare to jettison," the captain yelled as the alarm shut off.
"Or not!"
He cursed luridly and hit the bottom for Fusion 3.
"Three? What in the sweet, merciful Tester's name is going on?"
Sorry about that," the talker replied.
Kowalski dropped his coffee mug on the alarm switch.
"Sir."
"Ah!"
The XO had just appeared behind the CO again, causing the already somewhat overwrought captain to nearly jump out of his skin. One of these days, Tyler was going to see the XO actually walk. So far, he appeared to travel by telekinesis.
"I recommend that we convene a summary court and space, Spaceman Kowalski."
"I don't think that will be necessary, exec," the captain panted.
"Tempting, but no.
We'll talk about a captain's mast tomorrow. For now, I'm going to go to my cabin and change my shorts. Make that a general order."
"Medic to the missile compartment," the annunciator called. "Bring your syringe."
Tyler left the bridge, shaking his head.
"He didn't know if it was the reactor alarm or not,"
he said, giggling helpless.
"He's a captain, and he didn't know?
Oh, my God."
"Tester, spare us this day from your tests."
Chapter 4. The Potato Sack Incident. By the fourth day on the Francis Mueller, Tyler had taken to carrying a tranquilizer injector with him at all times. He wasn't sure if it was to use it on the other crewmen or himself, but he had it and a straitjacket with him when he was called to the bridge on second day watch.
"Taylor, you need to sedate Petty Officer Kyle," the captain said, pointing to a PO in the tactical section.
The petty officer was rocking in his chair, playing with himself.
Ha ha! Planet! Missed the planet! Ha ha!
Petty Officer Kyle was clearly enjoying himself.
Yes, sir, Tyler said, walking over and hitting the PO in the shoulder with the injector.
The sedative worked quickly, and in a few moments the petty officer slid bonelessly out of his chair and hit the deck with a thump.
Sir,
the XO said, appearing again behind the captain.
Ah! Sweet, merciful tester, Green! Wear a bell on your boot or something.
Yes, sir,
the XO replied seriously.
Sir, I think the P.O. Kyle needs to go before the mast.
I don't, the captain replied. He was clearly driven around the bend by Lieutenant Wilson's announcement that the fault in his calculations was that he forgot to account for Blackbird's mass, as well as all of her moons. It turns out that if he hadn't had that 40-minute delay when we were trying to get the course adjusted on the way in, we would have hit the planet. Tyler unfolded the straitjacket and started to load the tactical PO in as he kept one ear on the conversation behind him.
Well, at least we know where we are, sir, Lieutenant Wilson said. And I've got a course laid in for Grayson.
Are you sure? The captain asked. And are you sure there's nothing in the way?
Yes, sir, the communication officer said. We sent a ping to them. They replied asking where we've been for the last few days. I think the best response was that we were lying doggo under the communication silence, in case anyone was trying to sneak into the system, the captain said, rubbing his chin.
The less mentioned about the last week, the better.
Masterful response, sir, the XO said. Com, fire that off right away.
Aye, aye, sir.
We've got 2 weeks before we're due in the yards, the captain said. We're supposed to be doing workups, but with the crew in the shape it is, I don't think that's a good idea. We're already as worked up as any crew I've ever seen.
We can do them, sir, the XO protested. All the crew needs is a little firm discipline. If you just see your way clear to giving me a free hand.
We don't have any thumbscrews, Green, the captain said, shaking his head.
No, what they need is some downtime. A day off, bosun.
Yes, sir. The senior enlisted person on the ship was heavy-set, with thinning hair and a bulbous red nose that indicated he probably was in Siberia for the same reason as Doc Kearns.
Adjust axial one to a 15-degree 1G gravitational cone, the captain snapped.
He keyed the enunciator and cleared his throat.
All off-duty watch, report to axial one, and break out the potato sacks!
Axial 1 was a large tube running down the spine of the ship. Normally, it was set to low gravity and used for movement of personnel and equipment. Under the low G, personnel could move materials quickly and efficiently. Or, alternatively, crewmen who thought they were salty could move like a bat out of hell down the tube, bounding around under the 0.2 G field at speeds of up to 40 kilometers per hour, or moving huge loads like missiles or pallets of explosive bolts at only somewhat slower velocities. Of course, the law of conservation of mass applied, so all those salty crewmen eventually had to decelerate or dodge other crewmen who were moving down the corridor at speeds far in excess of sense. And since the human eye and mind are not designed to calculate automatically what is too fast, a closing speed, quite a few of those crewmen ending up impacting on some other sailor, or his large and occasionally deadly load, sometimes at speeds that would do for a small air car wreck. Axial 1 produced about 15% of the total incidental casualties on the ship. Of course, speeds in excess of 40 kilometers per hour had never made it into official reports, even in the Manticoran service. It would take a real jerk, like hard-ass Harrington or somebody, to report what actually went on in Axial 1. But for some strange reason, newer ships didn't have anything like it. Of course, Bew ships said that was because Axial 1 was a structural danger.
On the other hand, the admirals at Bew ships had served on the companion ships of the Francis Mueller. It was a statistical likelihood approaching certainty that some of them had been involved in an incidental casualty report, which was a much better explanation for removing Axial 1, in Sean's medical opinion, than structural anomalies. Sean considered all this gloomily as he looked up the corridor towards the bow of the ship and wondered if it was one of those idiots who had invented potato sack tobogganing. The floor of the circular corridor was normally scratched and scuffed alloy, but one strip of it, a U-shaped section about 20 meters across the cord and the full length of the corridor, had been quickly polished and waxed. At the same time, the gravitational pull in the corridor had been set to a 45-degree cone. That is, instead of pulling straight down or towards the exterior of the ship, the artificial gravity was pulling sideways at a 45-degree angle. Combined with slickness of the waxed portion, the tendency was to cause a person to slip and keep slipping. Towards the stern of the corridor, the gravity had been adjusted in the other direction. It was an artificial hillside with a catchment at the base, down which a succession of screaming spacers were now sliding at literally breakneck speed. The potato sacks on which they slid were of a strange, rough material that had been identified for Tyler as burlap. They were not apparently used for carrying potatoes anymore, but were kept for the sole purpose of this highly idiotic sport. They also stank to high heaven. The nature of the sport tended to cause flatulence, and storing them between times was best described as marinating. They smelled worse than any latrine Sean had ever encountered. But this was supposedly fun. He currently had four of the crew stretched out at the back of the aid station, two with broken legs, one with a broken wrist, and one with multiple breaks and contusions. The reason for the damage became apparent as he watched the next contestant. One of the crew, Cop from Missile Techs, was just starting down the artificial slope. He was one of the face-frozen-in-determination crowd, and it was well-earned. Cop had a reputation for being a hard-luck case, so naturally he didn't make it all the way to the braking field. Instead, he tried to fit in and surf. Although the corridor was curved, the artificial gravity drew on it equally across the surface, so it felt flat. What that meant was that using the weight of the buttocks, it was possible, with care and skill, to slide back and forth on the waxed portion and slalom down the corridor. The operative words were care and skill. Failure to use either sent the tobogganer into what pilots euphemistically refer to as an out-of-control situation. Cop only made it about a third of the way down before he lost it. He had just started to slalom when he went too far to the side and hit the unwaxed portion. This slowed his left buttock abruptly, and following the laws of Newtonian physics, his right buttock, and most of the rest of his body, continued in the direction they were going. This first induced flatulence, as his anus responded to the conflicting forces. Then a scream as the first pain hit, and last a pinwheeling figure bouncing down the corridor, his potato sack spinning off in one direction, and his shrieking body spinning faster in another. The yelling stopped, or at least changed tone to low groans, as he hit the combing of one of the corridor exits. Tyler worked his way out of the first aid station and laboriously climbed up the gravity well to the unwaxed portion, dragging two bags of supplies with him until he reached the injured missile tech. Cop was holding on to the combing with one hand while cradling the other arm and trying to tilt his head to keep blood from pouring into his eyes. Tyler felt his cradled arm and shook his head at an indrawn breath.
Broken! Probably a greenstick fracture.
He slapped a bandage on the bleeding head wound, attached a splint to the arm, and put on a cervical collar for good measure.
"He's going to be okay," he yelled up to the captain. "Not when I get a hold of him," the captain bellowed back. "What kind of a showing was that, Cop?"
this is the quality of sailor we get these days, the captain grumped. Sir, the exec said, apporting in behind him, there are regulations governing making oneself unavailable for duty through negligence. I'm not going to Captain Mast's cop for wiping out, the captain replied, and stepping back off his perch and leaning sideways against the gradient. But what this crew needs is a lesson on how to ride potato sacks. Not enough veterans in this crew, not enough instructors. It's up to the officers to pick up the slack. Captain, the bosun said uncomfortably as the commander held out his hand for one of the sacks. It's up to us to set an example, boats, Zemet said, snatching the square of cloth out of his resisting hand. Prepare for a demonstration of how to ride a potato sack, the captain yelled. Prepare to watch a professional. Well, Astro is pretty sure we're on course for Grayson, but it's a 4-day run even at max drive. Doc dropped into his chair and pulled out his bladder of whiskey, holding it away from his mouth and taking a hard squirt out of the neck. How's the captain? He coughed. He's breathing, Sean replied. Just looks like a standard coma. No evidence of subdural cerebral hematoma. Can you just say brain bruise for tester's sake? The warrant grunted. 4 days under the exec. There didn't seem to be much else to be said. Bosun, the XO said, standing on the bridge looking at the navigational readouts. We have a problem. Yes, sir, the bosun said faintly. That problem, the XO intoned, is slackness. Yes, sir. The captain scheduled his little game in the interests of jollying people up, but the root problem was slackness. They've all been slacking. Well, we're not going to have any slackness when I'm in command. No, sir. I've got a workup schedule, the XO continued, turning to face the NCO. Deep in his eyes, a little fire seemed to burn. As far as the bosun was concerned, it was burning his retirement papers. And we're all going to follow it, to the letter. He turned back to contemplating the astro display. Yes, sir, the bosun replied. We're not going to have any slackness, the XO repeated. We'll show the fleet that slackness doesn't happen on the Francis Mueller. Whatever it takes. But, sir, the bosun said, regretting the words even before they left his mouth. We don't have any thumbscrews. That, bosun, the XO replied in a low, mad whisper, is why they give us machine shops.
Tester, spare us this day from your tests. It's been nearly a day, Tester, with the captain in a coma, and the exec is preparing capital charges for a quarter of the crew. Based on simple statistics, Tester, no one is going to be alive when we reach Grayson. The ship will be a tomb, drifting helplessly in the grip of gravity wells and the solar wind.
Doc, I've got a problem, the bosun said, slipping into the sick bay after a cautious look around. Don't we all? The medic snapped, looking up from the captain's recumbent figure. I don't suppose the dwarfs come around yet. No, Kearns replied. The bosun looked up as Tyler slid through the door. I'm not going out there, Tyler said. It's a zoo. The crew's ready to mutiny, the bosun went on. They agree with the captain. If we let the exec get away with spacing a quarter of us every day, there won't be any of us left by the time we get to Grayson. That's an ugly word, Doc said. Mutiny. Yeah, but it's better than explosive decompression, Sean pointed out. That's not a word, it's a phrase, Doc replied. They're both going to be phrases we'll all get accustomed to if we don't figure something out, the bosun muttered. Well, Manticore doesn't generally use the death penalty, Tyler pointed out, rubbing his chin in thought. And if they do, they generally wait until the ship gets to a major port where a court-martial can take place with due process. Why not try to... never mind. Yeah, he'd never go for that, the bosun said. If we even brought it up, we'd be added to the list. Is he talking about just spacing them? Kearns asked. I mean, not even a bullet in the back of the head or anything?
No, the bosun replied with a grimace. He wants to either shoot them or give them a lethal shot and then...
Hey!
Yeah,
Kearns said with a narrowed glance. Now all we have to do is convince him not to space the bodies.
Decent burial, Tyler said after a moment. Surely it would only be proper to return them to the cool green hills of Grayson or something.
The warrant looked at the senior NCO and the corpsman for a moment and then narrowed his eyes.
Okay, what we're talking about here is conspiracy to mutiny by circumventing direct orders of a superior.
He looked them both in the eye.
And the penalty for that is death. I'll take my chance on a court-martial on Grayson, the bosun responded.
Me too, Tyler said. Hell, I'd prefer peep justice to this friggin' nutcase.
Chapter 5. The Quick and the Dead. The XO stormed down the deserted corridors of the crew compartment, looking around in delight at the near-pristine conditions. With none of the pesky crew cluttering things up, it was possible to have a truly efficiently run ship. Suddenly, he slid to a stop.
"Bosun!" he shouted, pointing to the floor. "What is that?"
"Gum, sir," the bosun replied.
"Who is in charge of this area?" the XO asked furiously.
"Cooper," the bosun replied. It was getting easier and easier to remember as the number of crew dropped precipitously.
"Well, space him," the XO said. "Gum on the floor is just slackness."
"Yes, sir," the bosun replied. "You'll remember that we're returning them to their families."
"Very well," the XO said, continuing on his survey. "Send him to the medics."
"No, no," Cooper yelled, hopping up and down in the grip from two men-at-arms and winking for all he was worth.
"Don't kill me, Doc."
"Oh, shut up and take it like a man," Tyler replied tiredly. He rolled up Cooper's sleeve and ejected the engineering tech with a sedative.
"Take him to the forecastle."
"I bet he dropped that gum on the floor on purpose," one of the men-at-arms grumped. "I could do with a 3-day vacation at this point."
"If we lose many more engineering techs, we're never going to make it," Sean replied darkly.
Captain Zemet opened his eyes and stared blearily into the face of Admiral Judah Yanikov. A quiet glance to the side showed the two medics, the engineering officer and the navigation officer, lined up against one wall of what was apparently a hospital room.
"Captain, would you kindly tell me what in the tester's name was going on up there?" the admiral said furiously. "I would especially like to know how you came to be in a coma and left that Mossadin of an XO in charge. The 123 personnel that your former XO had sedated have all been returned to duty, by the way."
"Well, sir," the captain said, not even glancing at the figures against the wall, "we were drilling on compensator adjustments in movement. The ship went right, and I went left, and that's all I remember."
"Warrant Officer Kearns?" Admiral Yanikov asked.
"Corpsman Tyler? Is that an accurate report?"
"He's our captain, sir," Kearns replied. "What he says is what happened."
"Hmph." The admiral peered at the captain for a moment, then shook his head. "That's not quite the same as saying it happened like he said. I don't have anywhere more out of the way to put you, Zemet, except Blackbird Base, and I already stashed your XO there. So I guess I'll have to leave you in command. The rest of you are dismissed."
"That's it?" Tyler asked, collapsing in the sickbay chair.
The flight back from Grayson had been made in total silence.
"What's it?"
Kearns asked, pulling out his bladder of whiskey and pouring some into his cup.
"No investigation?" the Manticoran asked. "We just go back on patrol?"
"You remember you're in Siberia, right?" the warrant asked, taking a sip of his tea. "And you know that Siberia was nothing but a giant prison."
"Sort of," We're all prisoners, trapped in a Siberia called the Francis Mueller. You, me, the captain, hell, even Cop and the chaplain, both of whom have been thrown out of that least one decent boat so far. And prisoners don't rat out other prisoners to the warden.
Oh. I notice you didn't say anything, Kearns pointed out.
Well, hell, Tyler said. I guess you're right. Why didn't he just say he fell in the shower?
He's too professional for that, the warrant officer said, tossing the bladder over to the corpsman.
Only amateurs fall in a shower.
Welcome to Siberia.